Don't you know it? Don't you know it? Don't you just love it? You lucky little devil. Guess who came back? Yes, just when you thought I was there under a rotting log, hidden in the woods, behind the rock, in a cave. Nope, I'm back here with you all. Robert and Carl are actually working on the area fishing report, sunfishandfranks.com, and we got a tech coming in to help them with all that kind of stuff, so I'm going to be back for a while. I get to come back and play with RJ, and today we have a guest with us, and he's the guestiest guest. What do the little girls say? He's my bestie. Yeah, one of my best buddies. This is Jim, and he's our Rapala guy.
Hello, hello.
And Jim, we've been friends for a long, long time. We've watched the store go down, watched the store go up, watched the store go up in flames, you know, watched it come back. We've been working together a long, long time, and it's where we get a lot of the cool stuff from. And VMC Hooks is all part of the Rapala brands,
correct,
right?
Correct.
And they're all made in France.
Correct.
So
all the hooks
made in France. When you're looking at our hook selection in the store, we have Japanese-made hooks. We have some American-made hooks. But we have European-made hooks, namely the VMC. So VMC is not made in, oh no, we don't want to talk about it. They're actually made by skilled workers.
Correct. And it's the oldest hook company in the world.
VMC is the oldest hook company in the world.
Correct.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I use them all the time. And there's another major brand from Eastern, Far East country, close to the rising sun, that, you know, when you I look at them, they copied every single VMC hook.
Yeah, when you're the best, you know, everybody wants to copy you.
Mm-hmm. The only difference between the two of them is A, VMC is a much better price, and B, the other ones have a brighter finish on it. Now, I'm not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but those are the only two differences. Other than that, they did a really good job of copying your hooks.
Yes. Yeah, like I said, when you're the best, everybody wants to be just like you.
Now, it's true that 8 out of 10 lures come with VMC hooks?
Yeah, if you closed your eyes and walked in any tackle shop and went to the plug wall, 80% of the time it will be a VMC hook. They're very big in the OEM business. Mirrorlures, there you go. Mirrorlure, everything on a mirrorlure is a VMC hook. It's a proprietary hook we make for them, but it is a VMC hook.
Yeah, he's letting that out, so he knows what's coming after the show.
Right, 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 exactly.
I want it, I want it, I want it.
Oh, man.
Frank, the very first lure that I ever had as a kid, when I graduated from sticking an earthworm on a hook, was a Rapala. And they were balsa wood back then, right? That would have been in the early 60s, late 50s. Yeah, late 50s. Oh, man, I'm dating myself here. But
here's the cool part. Explain to them.
It's still available, and it's still number one lure, and you can get it right at Fish and Frank's.
No kidding. The exact same lure you bought in the 50s and 60s, made the exact same way, same wood, same paint, same everything. If it says original Rapala, it's never changed.
Wow, right. That's amazing. You know, I remember it was in my stocking at Christmas time. I had all this other stuff, and, you know, I pulled this thing out, and I was like, wow, I've got a lure, and it looks so cool, and it looks like a minnow, and I caught a lot of fish with that lure.
It's still one of my favorite lures.
Yeah, I mean, and it broke my heart. It took years for me to ruin it, but once it got snapped in half.
Yeah, it's a balsa bait, so it's not going to be real durable.
But yeah, somewhere along the
way. Durable for years.
Yeah, durable for years, though. But, boy, I caught a lot of fish with that lure.
All right, here's what I want you to check out, RJ.
Okay.
You started it off with the balsa stuff. That's a balsa wood lure.
Wow, this is the Rapala BXM7.
Balsa Extreme.
Wow. So what makes it extreme?
Plastic coating.
It's a balsa bait, but it's encapsulated in the hard plastic body, so it's more durable than the original floater model that was just got the thin membrane on it. So that makes it a very durable bait, but yet it's still balsa, so it's got the buoyancy.
And it's got a more 3D look to the scales on it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. What plastic and balsa, you know, when they float, I've always thought that the balsa, the wooden lures, did a better job.
It's definitely different.
It's different.
I'm not going to go better or worse with that, but I will go very different.
Plastic seems to be like too buoyant. And I'm just my opinion now. Plastic is like really buoyant, you know, pops to the top really fast. It doesn't want to dive as quickly.
Now, what you've got there in your hand is one is balsa wood, the Balsa Extreme, with a coating of plastic over the outside with a completely different flotation. The other one is an X-Wrap. Now, X-Wrap's arguably the most durable, longest-lasting, harder-to-kill lure that I've ever seen.
Correct, and it's a total plastic.
Mm, and I've caught Barracuda on X-Wrap, and, you know, they chaw on it, but they don't get through it, and you get quite a few before it damages the lure enough. So, yeah, they really are armor-plated.
Now, with this, this isn't – I get to ask this question all the time, Jim. What's the difference between these two lures? One's an XR, the other's an SX?
Well, there's two different families. It's an XR8, actually the 8 being the size of the bait, and an SXR8. And they, you can get them in the same color. Difference would be that the XR is a black nickel hook, and it has the feathered tail on it, to where the SXR is a permasteel BMC hook with no feather on it.
So the one that starts with S does not have the feathered tail on
correct.
It. The one that starts with X has the feathered tail on it.
And the S actually is for salt. Because the permasteel hook is going to be more durable in salt water over a black nickel.
Really? I would have thought black nickel was like one of the most durable hooks ever.
Very durable, but there's nothing out there that won't rust.
Right. So permasteel is the silver, is that it's kind of a silver gray. It's not
correct.
Like shiny
it's not
silver.
Not shiny, correct. It's a matte finish to it.
Yeah, because the shiny silver ones actually corrode pretty quick.
Correct.
If you get the black nickel hooks, that black coating on it gives you like an extra year, year and a half over a shiny silver hook for as far as before it's going to corrode.
True, but everybody needs to treat their lures just like their fishing regular tackle. Rinse them off with clear water, fresh water after you're done, and they'll last you a longer time.
Now, do you have any preference, RJ, silver treble hooks, black treble hooks?
I like the darker treble hook. You know, talking about it from a diver's point of view, you tend not to see it. Silver on the other side, I guess people would argue you get a little more flash with it. But, you know, my feeling is that a fish is going to look at a lure. Anything that's not natural looking is going to cause them not to want to eat it. And I don't know whether a treble hook hanging down that's highly visible is going to make a fish want to eat it.
Now, that's the permasteel, not a bright silver, not a black.
Matte fish.
Kind of, it's a duller finish. So you'd have bright silver, the matte finish, permasteel, or the black chrome. Either any one of those three better or worse for you?
I still like the black hooks.
You like the black
hooks? And that's just personal preference. I like the black hooks.
Exactly.
I gotta say, I'm probably leaning that way too. I don't know why it is, because I caught fish with, you know, the permasteel hooks and silver hooks and everything forever, and never even thought about it. And then we're talking about it today. I'm going like, you know, I do tend to choose lures that have darker hooks on them, the black nickel.
Just these particular baits here, the black nickel is like a 1X, to where that permasteel is like a 3X. So it's going to be a little bit more durable, but anglers just open up your drags and your black nickel hooks will be just fine with you.
Well, it's the same as using a balsa lure. The difference between using an X-Wrap and a Balsa Extreme is my drag setting.
Correct.
Now, when I go to set the drag on my reel, on my rod, it's there, I got my lure tied on, and I want to be able to grab the line and pull a little bit off of the reel. does a couple of things. It keeps me from tearing stuff in half, straightening hooks. But also, if I get something jammed against the tip, I want to be able to pull it out a little bit. I'm talking to somebody, not paying attention, reeling, all of a sudden, thunk, the lure is right there at the tip. So I can pull a little bit of line off there. I don't have to hit the anti-reverse and reel backwards or anything. I can just pull a little bit of line off. Now, people say, well, that's not enough drag setting to land a big fish. It is if you steal a trick from old-fashioned fly fishermen. And with my old fly rods, when I learned to fly fish back, 60s, 70s, you had to palm the reel.
Backup drag.
You know, you would put your hand on it because they didn't come with drags back then, unless you paid $500 for a reel. I don't even think they existed. But, I mean, in my world, I know they didn't exist. And as a last-ditch effort, you put it against your pants leg and when your hand got too hot. All I do is when I'm holding a spinning reel and I've got my drag a little looser, you hold the rod in your dominant hand. If you're right-handed, it should stay in your right hand. If you're left-handed, it should stay in your left hand. If you're right-handed and you're cranking with your left, which is the way you should be doing it, if you extend your index finger out and put it towards the bottom of the spool, you can add a 16th of a pound of drag, 4 pounds of drag, exactly. 10 pounds of drag, and instantaneously release it or add that pressure.
And never changing the drag on the reel itself.
Never have to touch it. I just do it with my fingers. Now, here's a really important tip. You know, you just extend your finger out, put it against the bottom of the spool. Never on the top. You won't die. But if you split a fingernail all the way up because you got caught in a little hole on the spool,
you won't do it again.
You won't do it again. So we're not talking life or death here, but we're talking this is supposed to be fun and enjoyable, not painful because you jammed a knuckle or split your nail all the way up. Because believe it or not, a split nail really hurts.
Yes, it does.
Screws the rest of the day up, too.
Messes the rest of the day up. So I put my fingers on the bottom of the spool. Now, if you're left-handed, holding the rod in your left hand, and I'm cranking with my right, I bring my thumb out, and I put my thumb on top of the spool, because that's the following the rotation. If your left hand goes to the reel, you're going to put your fingers on the bottom. If your right hand is going to do it, use your thumb on the top of the spool. Then you're following it. It's sliding along, not going against your fingers or thumb in the case, whichever it would be. But by doing this, you can instantaneously add or release drag pressure a little bit, a lot, whatever. But it's very critical that you keep your rod. If we're using an old analog clock, so now we lost everybody under 30. What do you mean 6 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 10 o'clock? Figure it out. Google it. All right? If your rod, you're holding it up, and you're going to use your fingers or your thumb for the drag, it must be at least at 10 o'clock, preferably at 11 o'clock. So you don't want it all the way back at 12, but that's okay. Somewhere between 10 and 12 o'clock, pointing up in the air. If you point the rod directly at the fish and you start applying pressure, you have no idea how much pressure you're applying. You don't get to feel it, so you will break the line all the time.
Or lose the fish.
And you'll lose the fish because you're either going to break the line or rip it out of his mouth. You don't know how much pressure you're putting to it. By holding your rod up in the air, and I usually brace it against my forearm, now I'm applying a little bit of pressure with my finger, or if I got the rod in my other hand, my thumb. And as I increase the pressure, I can feel the rod pulling down. I know how much power I'm putting to it and when I've done too much and I need to back off a little bit. But pointing the rod at the fish, you don't have that feel, so you will break the line all the time or rip the lure out of the fish's mouth. This just is the way it's going to happen.
Something's going to go wrong.
Right, and you don't have the mechanical advantage of the rod at that point either because your rod is giving you some pressure to put on that fish.
Well,
and it's a great shock absorber.
That's the part I'm looking for is the shock absorber aspect of it. Because if you point your rod at a fish and say you have 3 pounds of drag, if you bring your rod up to 11:30, 12 o'clock, you've added 2 more pounds of drag to it from the friction of the guides. Now, I've measured this. I know this is where it's at. And people say, well, you're guessing. No, I'm not guessing. It's about 2 pounds most of the time. Could be a little less, a little more, but about average 2 pounds, and which is a lot. People think they want 40, 50 pounds, 20 pounds to fight a fish with. Tie 10 pounds to the end of your fishing pole, any pole you got, and see if you can pick it up off the ground.
Yeah.
The only advantage to having a reel that has 30, 40 pounds of drag is you're working in the first 20, 30% of the drag, so the drag washers are spinning a little more freely, it's a little looser. With a standard reel, they're going to generate about 18, 20 pounds. And to generate that, you've really got to crank the drag down where you're crushing the disc. With a heavier drag reel, you're only using the first little bit of it to accomplish the same thing. So it actually works smoother, lasts a lot longer. And by the way, I had a kid in the store, and he's big on Shimano. And Shimano makes some awesome reels. So does Daiwa. So does Penn. They all make pretty good products. I took the drag apart on a Shimano Stradic and showed it to him. I took apart a Penn Fierce drag and showed it to him. And he's telling me that the Shimano's generating 25 pounds of drag and the Penn's only generating like 18. And I showed him the drag washers. I took them out, actually showed it to him. The Shimano uses drag washers a little bit bigger than a nickel, almost like a quarter, but it's just a ring. It's not a complete disc. The Penn is using a smaller disc, but it's a full disc. It's not just a cutout of the ring. If you picture a hula hoop, you know how you got nothing in the middle, and you just, that's the way Shimano does their drags, because it provides pressure on the outside of the spool. It's very effective. But for years, all they ever used was felt.
Yep.
Now they put the graphite drag washers in, same thing Penn does, but you're paying a lot of extra money to get that in that particular brand. But surface-wise, they're about the same. And there is no law against saying whatever you want about your reel. If you want to say this generates 150 pounds of drag, you can say it. Doesn't make it any more or less true.
I've seen them lock them down where they wouldn't pull out at all. So that's 100% of drag there.
Yeah, so, you know.
That's another good reason for pulling a little bit of line off when you first get started. Because have you ever had a drag that was frozen and you didn't realize it was frozen until a fish hits?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good reason for giving that one yank.
Yeah, make sure you spin your spool because salt tends to crusty stuff up. But getting back into this, the point of all that whole rant was don't believe what you read. You know, there's nobody saying, policing the fishing industry going, you can't call that a 25-pound test drag. There's just whatever they want to put on there. What I'm considering right now is king mackerel are coming into the Gulf of Mexico.
Probably the best thing to go catch right now.
All right. And what we've got is Lure Jensen PET spoons. Now, there's a drone-style spoon. The PET style has a different head on it.
Correct.
They cut the top of the spoon to provide some, it's cavitation.
Yes, I think that might be the word to use for it.
Because towards the head of it, it's got cutouts on the side.
Correct.
Creating more of a head shape, where the other ones are just kind of cylindrical, round. A drone spoon doesn't have any cutouts along the side. Now, the Lure Jensen PET spoons, now, one of the reasons I love pulling them is the yellow feather.
Yes.
I'm okay with the white if you want a white feather.
So you sound like JR. You're ready to go with feathers again.
Yeah. But it literally, that yellow feather to me, I've caught more king mackerel on lures that have a yellow feather than I have on anything else. Now, you a gold or silver guy, Jim?
I'm a silver guy.
Silver.
I like silver.
RJ?
Same here, silver.
Yeah, I don't really have a preference. I don't know. I guess I would lean more to silver because if I'm trolling it in the Gulf of Mexico, you're going to get a little brighter flash out of it, a little more tension getting.
That's the way I think of it myself. But I think you get, especially on a sunnier day, I think you're going to get a little more flash out of it.
So, now I didn't look. Are these hooks replaceable? It looks like.
They are. They're riveted in. I don't know if anybody's ever really broke one of them out or had to replace one. Yeah. But, yeah.
Well,
I mean,
you could. Or is that a rivet?
It's a rivet.
It's a rivet.
I'm putting my glasses on because I know all of us think, it's got a screw head on it, Jim. That's a flat-edged screw head, isn't it?
Well, back alley, you're right. Glasses do work.
I'll be darned. So you could replace that.
Yeah, actually, it's a replaceable hook design.
I don't think they sell the hooks with the feathers on
them. Not with the feather like that, no.
Because it looks like basically an old 3407 pattern, you know, just a regular O'Shaughnessy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it looks like an O'Shaughnessy is all it is. But, yeah, you would have to tie your get your fly tie and put your little feather back on it.
Now, the other thing you could do is simply put a yellow grub on it.
This is true.
You could put a curl tail of some kind on there. When you go trolling, what speed do you troll for king mackerel?
Ooh, king mackerel. It really depends on the time of year and what they're doing, but usually, I mean, as slow as I can get the boat going. Just enough to keep the lures where I want them in the column. And, I mean, I've actually put a storm sock out because just in idle, it just wanted to go a little bit too fast, and right. So we'd slow it down, especially if I'm using some kind of live bait or such. But it's my whole...
If I got bait out, whether live or dead or whatever I'm using for the kings, I'm going to do exactly as you said because I want the boat almost drifting.
Yes.
But now...
Putting your baits in the column where you want them.
If I'm using, like, the Lure Jensen spoon, Rapala 10, or Rapala 25, probably what I would have mixed up, I'd start with a... Rapala 25, I'd go to a 10, and then I would have a XR 10 or 8, and then I would have my spoons on there, or the 25, the 10, and a couple of spoons. The smallest spoon being the furthest back. But what I usually start out when I'm doing all lures like that, I'm going to start out around 2-3 miles an hour, and I'm going to get my set where I want it. I'm going to get all my lures put in place where they want to cross, tangle, get a good stack going up on the water column, and then I'm going up to about 4-4.5 miles an hour, and if I do see fish either on my depth finder or visually see them in the water, and I'm not getting the hook up, I'm going to probably bump up to 5. Then 5.5. I've gone as fast as 7 or 8 getting these fish to hit.
Yes. And the nice thing is, like you mentioned, that when you get into the big XR mags, those 10, 15 to 25, those things will run up to 13 knots without cavitating like some big deep divers do.
I've pretty much given up on all of them. I've got the Rapala big, you know, depth-specific lures.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got one other brand. I don't carry many of them, but I carry a couple. The reason being is so many of those depth Pacific lures, and there's two big names out there, and the one company sucks, and the other company's a real nice guy, but their baits tend to go sideways a lot.
Yes, and it will create that cavitation. Next thing you know, you look out back, and it's sitting there popping along the top of the water.
And it's spinning, and it's going all kinds of crazy. And I would get complaints from the customers, and I would have to take, and sometimes you got to take a channel locks and a hammer to tune the lure back where it'll run right.
Correct.
And 99% of the Rapala lures, track straight out of the box, and they'll go much faster, still tracking the way they're supposed
to. They tank tune everything before it goes in a package.
Really?
Yep.
I'm not sure I would want that job. Can you imagine?
No.
Put it on the thing, drop it in the water. Okay, it's good. Put it on the thing, drop it in the water. Okay, it's good. I mean.
No, I don't want the job of painting the ass.
Painting the ass. Yeah, I can say. I don't know. I like working lures. I don't want to work in a factory. No way. I mean, life can be repetitious enough. You know. Everybody sees you in the bait shop. You're talking about fishing. You know, you're working with rods and reels. You know, you're doing this and doing that. And they don't see you when the tank goes bad and all of a sudden just discolors. It's killing half your bait. People say, your bait isn't as good as it was before. I'm like, it will be, but give me some time to get these freaking tanks aligned in. We ended up with, Carly described it as a lichen, which is bacteria and algae gets together. It's what grows on trees, that moss that grows on the trees. It's kind of a lichen. It's a combination of the two things. And so it's not like catastrophic, but it was turning the water brown and lowering the oxygen levels.
Oh, that's not good.
So I was losing a lot of bait. I mean, it's costing me $100 a day in dead bait. And we thought we had it fixed. Two tanks were running about 300 plus gallons, 300 to 400 gallons of water. And we stripped them down, scrubbed them, put a gallon of bleach in the tanks, ran the tanks for an hour, and it came back.
Hmm.
And I'm like, it took 2 weeks, and all of a sudden the water turned brown again. The bait was living great, everything was working fine, and all of a sudden 2 weeks later, right back where we started. So one of the biologists I know told me, well, if it was left anywhere in the system, you know, it can come back. So I was there till after 1 o'clock this morning. Once the store closed, I cut all the pipes out of it, replumbed it, new pumps, new hoses, new pipe, scrubbed all the walls of the bins down with a scrub brush and bleach, sprayed them, put 2.5 gallons of bleach in it, ran it for 2 hours. And then it takes pretty much an hour to get the water out. It takes about an hour to get the water in. It takes about water. So we started over this morning. The bait's living fine. It's back to the way life used to be. Everything's working good.
Tune in again next week, boys and girls, and find out if the brown came back.
Well, I'm in the process of building all new bait tanks for that side.
Yeah.
Because I got one tank, and we actually pass water between the two of them. We pump it one way and the other. And it's always clear. The other tank, brown as mud, and the bait dies. The one other tank, the bait lives fine. The water's clear. I had no idea what was going on. But when I cut the pipes all up from the water circulation system, inside was 1/8 of an inch of this brown slime.
They found where it was coming back from.
It was the only thing I could think of, and I had to reuse a couple of parts. So I was sitting back there spraying them out, scrubbing them with a bottle brush. Because I was only buying a coupler. I wasn't buying another $18 valve.
Understand that.
Well, and this is a lesson for all you people up north that want to move to Florida and open up a bait shop. Listen to these stories carefully before you make that decision.
Well, nobody sees that. They just see in there.
Oh, what a fun day. You walk around, talk to the customers, sell them a lure.
They don't see the $100 a day in dead loss that because you're busy, you can't get back and pick it, so you can still. I don't get my money back out of it, but I get some of the money back when I sell a bag of frozen. I lose about, for what I sell it for, I'm losing about $3, $4 a bag for what I pay for it. But I do get some of the money back. But once it's rotten, it goes in the garbage.
Yeah.
And it's just 100% loss. So, you start losing 100, 150 bucks a day, you feel that quick. So, anyway. But that's life in the bait shop. That's the way it goes. I'm Fishing Frank. That's Jim over there. RJ up in command and control. If you're just joining us here, we've been talking, and Jim is our Rapala guy, And we've got a couple of baits here. I'm looking for another one. And
that's it.
No, not that one yet. I'm going to do their number one selling and probably the number one fish catching lure we sell. And I hate to say it's Storm Bait.
And Stormline.
Which is part of the Rapala family. But these Wild Eye Swim Shads, there we go. Now, RJ, you've got the white. Can you see the number on the back of the pack? What the color code is for that?
It's the 03 Pearl.
Okay, PRL?
PEARL.
Okay, that's the number one color. The Pearl is number one, no matter what. From the tiniest one to the biggest one, that's the number one selling color. Because white is the only color of the Pearl that you have in your hand. It can be used in very dark, black, murky water. It can be used in crystal clear, gin clear water, or anywhere in between. It's the only color that covers every water condition. No other color will do that. Now, Jim, you have the number two best-selling color. What is that one?
What's the B&K Bunker.
The Bunker. That one, how would you describe it?
It's a little darker head. It's got, you know, your markings down the side. It's definitely opposite of the Pearl.
So it's got kind of a brownish tan colors with some black markings, a little white on the belly, and a translucent.
Correct, yeah, it translucens back to almost a clear tail on the back end of it.
Almost like a hologram image on that, correct. The head. And
this actually is a 4-inch and a 7/16 ounce.
But now what makes these lures very, very popular is they catch a lot of fish. Now, RJ, what size is yours?
I have the 3-inch.
That's the number one selling size.
I have tackle boxes full of these.
Yeah. And they work as a jig. They work as a crankbait. The only thing it doesn't do is topwater.
Exactly. And it's
well, if you reel it fast enough, it's a topwater. Yeah. But there's no fish that we know of that can catch it.
You can't fish it wrong. You just got to find out how the fish want it that day.
That's right. I've caught a lot of fish on these lures, skimming them along the bottom, walking the beach. You know, you reel them for a little bit, drag them a little bit, reel them a little bit, pull them up, drop them down.
Find what the fish want.
You catch fish. It's an amazing lure.
And so they do catch a lot of fish. The number two reason is you get three in a pack. It costs you a dollar and change for each one. And you have three. For around $4.
Fully rigged,
ready to tie on your leader, clip on your leader, snap on, whatever you're going to do to it, and it's ready to go. You don't do anything to it. So it's amazing. But now I've got this is a 2-inch, 1/8 ounce. And Jim, you got the 4-inch?
4-inch, 7/16 ounce.
All right. Now, what's funny about it, the 3-inch is the number one size for catching the most fish.
Overall.
Because I can catch a 40-inch snook with it and on that 3-inch bait just as well as I can catch them on a 4 or 5 or 6-inch bait because of the snack factor. Everything wants a little snack now and again. So you can catch monster fish on small baits, but you can't catch small fish on big baits. But the 3-inch is number one overall size. Now, if I was strictly going snook fishing, I'd probably be throwing the 4. It's a little bigger presence. It's going to be a little more attractive for a snook. Now, if I was going tarpon fishing in the middle of the harbor, out Boca Grande Pass, the deep holes in the harbor, I'm going to be using the 5 or 6-inch, without a doubt.
Bigger profile, heavier lure.
Much more closer to a full-grown ladyfish or trout, something they would want to eat.
Exactly.
I still would pick these two colors, you know, the Bunker and the Pearl. Those would be my two go-to colors. If I was going to buy two packs, one would be Pearl, the other would be Bunker. But the Chartreuse and all the rest of them, they all work, you know, depending on water conditions and what have you. But if I'm going to go tarpon fishing in the middle of the harbor or Boca Raton Pass, I'm using the 5 or 6 inch. I got a big rod, 50, 60 pound test on it, and casting it, 60 pound fluorocarbon leader, usually around 3.5-4 feet, because I like to be able to cast it. If I get a leader too long, I can't throw it well. So that would be my go-to. And unfortunately, the 3-inch is not one I'm going to pick. The 4-inch maybe, but the 3-inch is not one I'm going to pick for these tarpon. I got to skip all the way down to the 2-inch for my number one tarpon lure. Now, this is not for tarpon in the harbor. It is not for tarpon on the flats. But if the tarpon are in a river or a canal, the number one year after year is the Storm Swim Wild Eye Swim Shad 2-inch.
2-inch.
Pearl, I don't think they make a bunker, but anything black and white, those 2-inch Storm Swim Shads are the number one. Kit wipes everything else out. The closest second, and it's a fairly distant second, is the Tiny Terrorize from DOA. Tiny Terrorize do real good, and the Terrorize do good, but they are not in the league with the Storm for some reason.
That's for your smaller tarpon?
Yeah, for the canal tarpon, up to 4 foot.
Makes sense.
Literally, from 3 feet down, this 2-inch bait will outfish anything. And if you want to know the exact particulars, we might have time, but stop by the store. We'll explain it to you, how to speak tarpon, how to read tarpon. But the 2-inch Storm Swim Shad rocks them all. What's weird is I went from the 5-6-inch for the harbor tarpon down to the 2-inch for the river canal tarpon. Now I've got to go to a completely different lure. I got it in a box here somewhere. What'd I do with it, Jim? There it is. I got it. Okay. The number one lure for tarpon on the flats. If you're on the east side of the harbor, behind the sandbars. If you're in Bull Bay, Turtle Bay, Pine Island Sound, Gasparilla Sound, on the flats. Not in the ICW, not in the open harbor, anywhere behind the sandbar, shallow bottom, you know,
on the flats.
18 inches to 3-4 feet of water, you know, the flats. The number one tarpon bait I've ever found, and I found it by accident, but I've just tore them up with it since then. SX, that's Sam X-Ray, Randy, what do you do, T?
SXRT.
Tango. Okay. Tango. So SXRT 10 MBS. So here, you know how to speak, and because I slur. What's the model on that? Radio talk.
This is the XRT 10 MBS Mossback Shiner.
It is amazing. Now,
and
this is.
And it's single hook.
It's got two single hooks. There's
single
no inlets. Treble hooks on it.
Nice thing about the single hooks is that, especially if you get into some vegetation, it has four less hooks to grab the weeds. And you can pull that through vegetation a lot better without pulling and getting hung up or bringing, you know, back to the boat with you with the lure.
When you're trying to get the hooks out of the fish's mouth,
exactly.
There's four less points to deal with.
A lot of the guys like that, especially when they have people on the boat and they throw a live fish up on. Here, take his hook off, and it's got four extra hooks flopping around on it.
Yeah, it's literally, it's a walk the dog lure, but it's not a top water.
Subsurface, yes.
It's a subsurface lure. It literally, when you're doing it, if you can, if you're right-handed, you hold the rod in your right hand, you reel with your left. So in order to figure out the same movement, you know, over the radio, if you take your right hand and start tapping your head, raising your hand up and down, tapping your head, hear that? That's tapping my head. Take your left hand, start moving around in a circle on your belly, and you're left hand's going around a circle on your belly, your right hand's tapping your head. Hear that? That's going still there. Yes, if you rub your belly in a circular motion, tap your head, that's the same thing when you grab the rod and reel. True or false, Jim?
Oh, no, you're 100% correct.
I had to figure out how to describe it on the radio.
That was how you had me over here chuckling about it.
So when you're walking the dog, the object is to create slack, snap the lure so that the front end of the lure goes from the left to the right and then slams back to the left, slams back to the right, just slashing sideways through the water. But all this is taking place under
subsurface.
The water, subsurface. And what's nice is it almost suspends. It'll fall a little bit on you.
Very slow fall. Very slow.
Very slow. So you can work it in 2-3 feet of water without a lot of problem.
Yes, it took some years. We had the boys from Minnesota down here, and we kept telling them, now, the X-Raps are nice. I mean, especially you get into anything over 6 foot of water. But we said, we need something that runs less than an eight foot and a half, 2 foot. And they're like, we've seen that water out there. You're trying to tell me all that water is only 2 foot deep? I was like, that water's a lot shallower than you think it is. So it took them a couple of years before they developed it. And it's worked very nice for us.
Yeah, I mean, we were throwing it because it was a new lure. And, you know, I told you, okay, I'll check it out, see what I think of it. So I took it out. And I'm on the east side of the harbor. Actually, the boat was outside of the sandbar, but we had a very high tide that day. It was like a 1.8 or better, and a little bit of west wind coming, so we had a lot of water. And I was throwing it way up on top of the bar, working it back off, and I thought maybe I'd find a redfish or, you know, maybe a snook or something, tarpon, about a 3.5-footer. Released it, went, wow, that was cool. What do you think of that? I caught several doing that. Then we took it around, went behind the bar, up around the islands, and on the east side, about halfway between Alligator Creek and Pirate Harbor, there's an island, and on the north end of it, there's a little bit deeper cut, and it comes back and it joins, but there's more islands behind it. But right on that sweep through, it's about a foot deeper than the surrounding areas, and as we were going by, we could literally see them in there. Tarpon, you know, they don't, some of them will lay still, but one always got to roll around a little bit. Started throwing in there, and it was, you know, basically shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah.
It was great. So that, I've never seen one work as well. Does it work in the open harbor? Maybe, I doubt it. Does it work in the canals? No, not at all. Not for the canal tarpon. It's no good for that. The 2-inch Storm Wild Eye Swim Shad in the canals, or up on the Peace River, Shell Creek, once you get up way up river. Out in the open harbor, the 5-6-inch storms, they work great. But back on the flats, I don't even remember the name of the
thing. SXRT-10, Twitching Minnow.
Is it a Twitching Minnow? Yeah, that's what works. We only got, what, 5 minutes? Oh, well, you, clocks are over. I haven't done this
somewhere,
in a while.
Somewhere around that, Frank.
Okay, we got a while. All right. Get a lot of questions about these. What are these, Jim? This is Williamson, another one of the, you know, Rapala family.
Yeah, it's a Williamson speed jigs and slow falling flutter jigs. This is for you guys offshore mainly. They make them down 2 ounces up to 9 ounces. They're already pre-rigged. All you need is a boat and a fishing pole, and you're ready to go. The high-speed vertical jig, it's designed if you got a heavy current or a windy day, if you're not anchored up. It stays under the boat a lot better than the wider jig, but the Koika jig is the newer of the two. It's a little shorter, fatter, and it's going to have more fluttering fall when you drop it after you jerk right. It up to where
here's,
the...
Here's something I didn't think about. The narrower one, what's the name of the narrower one?
The high speed.
The high speed vertical jig. It's called ABY...
Abyss.
Abyss, okay. This one is going to stay, if you're drifting, with the boat better.
Yes.
It's not going to
go
walk
out
away
from it as easy.
Yeah, because the other one is with the wider body... more parachute, it's going to go away from you more rather than staying as vertical under the boat.
Correct.
So,
and the one thing you don't want is a big bow in the line.
This K-O-I-K-A.
Koika.
Koika. Now, you have another one that's similar to this one, the go something G.
There is a...
Yeah. Remember, you know, 15, 20 years ago, when we were starting to do this, we knew the name of everything.
I had a younger mind then.
there were also less models back then.
Oh, I don't know about that. It's just, you know, we could sit there and just chat model numbers, color numbers, all that stuff. You know, I could walk around and see an empty peg on the wall, and I knew what was there, the model number, the name, and the price. Now I look around, and I got to walk up. There's a back tag on it. I got to get my glasses out, read the back tag, and go, what the heck is that? Oh, yeah, that's whatever. I got, you know, differences. But each one of these has a single – oops, sorry. They've got a single hook on them. Now, when these jigs started, going back to the old diamond jig days,
yep.
You tied the line to the top, had a treble hook on the bottom. And then, all of a sudden, they call these speed jigs, vertical jigs, because of the way the hook is. The hook's literally tied to a little piece of leader, and then to a split ring, and then attached to the top of the lure, so it hangs about halfway down.
Correct.
And it's a single hook, not a treble hook. So there's no treble hook on the bottom of this. There's no hook actually tied to an eye. They actually have a little bit of line, and they swing freely around the jig. Isn't that kind of a strange thing? You wouldn't think that
it
would
is.
Work.
I would think that it wouldn't work, but apparently it does.
And you always tie onto that solid ring, the same ring that the hook and the lure is tied to. That way it lets the hook and the lure freely independent of one another.
What's the loop for on the end, on the
tail? Because not everybody likes vanilla ice cream. Somebody might want to put a hook on the bottom.
Okay.
So they can put a split ring on and attach a treble hook down there or another single hook. And you'll see them sometimes with eyes in the middle and all that for different types of jigging. But with this single hook on that little leader... Now, here's one I want to make sure I understand this. I've got the hook, a little bit of leader, and then there's a split ring. And then you've got the lure attached to the split ring. Am I tying to the center split ring or the one with the hook on it?
The split ring.
The center one.
The center split ring,
the
yes.
The one that's attached to the hook and to the jig.
Correct. That way it lets the lure fall freely. Once you have a fish, it doesn't have the lure as not apprehending the fish of the hook set. But I didn't believe it till I've tried it, and it makes sense because I've had people go, the lure knocked off the fish because they had it tied to the hook, to the lure, though.
If you tie it to the lure, you're more likely to lose the fish.
Correct.
So you don't want to tie to the actual metal coming out of the lure itself. You want to tie to the split ring to that.
Correct.
Very cool. I didn't know that. I like that. Now, out of the two of these, one is skinny, and it's got a heavier bottom on it. And this one, when you see the different shapes, it's not about when you lift it up, a wider, flatter one versus a narrower, skinny one. It's all about when you drop your rod tip and the lure starts to fall.
Correct.
So,
the Abyss, here again, it's more for high speed if you're having a heavy current or if you're drifting for the day or whatever. But with the heavier weight to the bottom, if you can see it, the bait, it flares out so that as it drops, it's going to flutter more. But it's going to drop quicker. Because it's not, it's more pencil.
It's more of a shoot up and dart down.
Correct.
And a little off to one side or the other.
To where the Koika is going to be a shorter, fatter bait, and as you pop it up, it's going to lay more flat and flutter back side to side.
Because, to be truthful, you don't know which one they're going to want, and that's why guys say, well, I like this style. And I say, well, that's great. I'm glad you enjoy that style, but if it was me, I would want one of each because if I'm jigging for 20 minutes, I don't get a fish. I'm going to switch to the other style and see if that one, you know,
that
will produce
true.
Some results. And one of my favorite colors,
believe it or not, yes, I know I'm a bit weird,
is the, not that one. I had it here. Where is it? Getting around. Come on. Hot pink is the one I was looking for. I don't see the hot pink, so I don't know the numbers on it. I had it here. I don't know what the heck I did with it.
HP.
HP. Okay.
That well, makes sense.
You got the guy from Rapala here. You
right.
know all that. The HP color, and I like... Here it is. I was just looking for it to get the color. This isn't an X-Wrap. Hot pink is a great color. And if I can get that in a jig, what I don't understand is for the human eye, and this is where a lot of us have a problem with, we know that colors start to dissipate at 30 feet.
Correct.
You're a diver, so the first thing that you lose is red. Red appears to be green. It's not like these idiots say, oh, red disappears. Now, we don't have the brightest military in the world, but if red disappeared in more than 30 feet of water, what color would submarines be? I mean, after, you know, over 100 years of building submarines, they would go, oh, if we did a red sub, it's invisible. No, they're gray or whatever, you know. So they're that myth's gone. But as you go down, red turns to green. Pink would be gone by that point, wouldn't it?
Well, I'm not sure about that. The last color you'll lose at depth. I've been down to about 1,400 feet in the Edwin Link, and all you see is blue. Even with the white lights from the sub, all you see is blue. Everything looks like it's colored blue.
So
blue's the last wavelength to disappear before you get to black.
Because even white's gone.
White's gone by then, too, yeah.
But wouldn't pink be like 30, 40 feet it would go
Probably,
away?
Yeah.
So when I'm in 60, 80 feet of water and I'm dropping a pink jig down there and I'm out fishing the other ones, I guess fish perceive colors, their eyes are more adapted to that depth so they can actually perceive the colors?
Well, we know that they see colors. We just don't know if they see them the way we see them.
Okay, because...
need to ask the fish that.
That's right.
I've done, you know, black and silver and pink and white are my two... go-to colors down deep. Don't know why, but...
If it works, keep doing it.
All right, but we're out of time, right? We want to... Jim, he's one of my best friends. He's with Rapala. RJ's up in command and control. Luckily, another very good friend of mine. And I'm fishing Frank. And yeah, I'm back for a while, so get used to it, sucker. I'm here. Deal with it. Bye! Just to ease my mind.